Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
So I have been unintentionally sitting on this show since July, mostly because when I first recorded it, I had some audio issues that took me a little while to fix up. And by the time I did, I had other stuff I needed to put up, and eventually it just kind of got lost in the mix. So this is a talk with Jeff Walensky, and he has an interesting idea on planet formation and how it connects into the electric universe idea. And it's a pretty short little talk. It's about 23 minutes long. And, yeah, now I'm finally putting it up. So, sorry it took so long, Jeff. Here you go. All right, tonight I'm talking to Jeffrey Walensky. And, Jeffrey, you have a what you call an alternative star theory.
Yes.
Before we get into the theory, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and your background?
All right. Well, I went to high school at Cocoa High School in, Cocoa, Florida. And, after I graduated there, I went into the Marine Corps from 2003 to 2007, and I got out and I went directly to Florida State University. And from there, I left Florida State and went down to Cocoa again and went to the Brevard Community College, which is now Eastern Florida State College. And then I transferred to UCF, and I'm finishing up my degree at UCF right now, which is in human communication.
Okay, all right. And how does that affect your theory here? Like, where's the influence on your theory from your college life?
Well, it's communication is what it's all about. I discovered by reading a lot of scientific articles and books that scientists have a difficult time communicating with one another, and the ideas that they want to share are haphazard, if you will.
Okay, all right. Well, why don't you start out with a little bit of the background on this theory? It does bear some resemblance to the electric universe.
Oh, of course, yeah. One of the major similarities, just to start with the electric universe side of it, is that the orbital parameters that we currently have were not it wasn't always like this. In other words, the orbits of the objects in our solar system were not as they currently are. And they change. They change, and it's very common that they change. But currently it's accepted that they don't change, and everything was this way forever. And I don't think that's correct whatsoever.
Okay.
There's that. Another similarity is the importance of magnetic and electrical forces in outer space. I think those are overlooked, and everything is gravity-centric, which is very, very bad. Because it narrows people's minds down, and they can't, you know, look at things holistically. You know, they don't look at the broad picture. They just narrow their minds, and everything has to be this. And if there's anything that doesn't fit in that little paradigm, then they, you know, disregard it.
Yeah.
No, I see that a lot.
What started you looking at this in the first place?
Well, I've had an interest in the stars since I was a child, looking up at the stars. Asking my dad, you know, what they think, how the universe came to be, you know. It was a very, very strong interest of mine since I was, you know, 9, 10 years old. It's been my whole life, basically, my interest in it. And to think that, you know, something, you know, like this would happen to me is completely unexpected. I did not expect that I would be discovering something of this magnitude. It's taken me off guard. I still have trouble with it every single day.
So what happened that caused this discovery?
Well, the one of the events that happened, the beginning that set all this off into motion, was I was in Okinawa. I was in the Marine Corps at the time, and I took a geology class at University of Maryland. They have a branch over there. Mm-hmm. And I learned about the Earth, you know, how the, you know, Earth works, and, you know, the mantle, and, you know, volcanoes, all that good stuff. And it was interesting to me because I like rocks and minerals and stuff like that. But fast forward a few years, I noticed, you know, the Earth is differentiated. There's an iron core, there's a mantle, there's a crust, and there's a thin atmosphere. And I was sitting on the couch, or can I tell you about how this discovery happened?
Sure.
Okay. I was sitting on the couch in my then girlfriend's house in 2011. I remember it was September 3rd. It was on a Saturday night, or was it a Sunday night? I can't, whichever September 3rd is.
And okay.
Oh yeah. I was looking at Wikipedia and I was just, you know, being curious as usual. And I looked at the Stellar Evolution page and just, you know, browsing around. And I noticed a graph, a picture of an evolved star. And it had onion-like layers. You know, you had your iron and nickel in the center, and then you had your magnesium, and then you had your, you know, lighter and lighter elements all the way out to oxygen and hydrogen and helium on the outside. And it said, this is an evolved star, a star before a core collapse, and then it's going to, you know, explode. And I looked at it, and I was like, wait a second. That's not going to explode. That's the Earth. And then, you know, the entire sky fell down. I was like, holy shit. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, it was very, very, wow. And I realized that the Earth is an ancient star. And I was like, well, that would mean that there's individual objects that are between Earth size and the sun size. And I was, oh, wow, that's the planets, you know, and they're all evolved stars and they're all going to lose their thick atmosphere and leave the heavy remains over in the center. And that's, you know, what stellar evolution and planet formation is. It's the same thing. And then I was like, oh man, I don't know what to do about this. So I stepped back, you know, I got off the couch because I was looking at my laptop. I closed my laptop screen and I stood up in the living room and I was like, oh man, oh man. And I had to, you know, get some air. So I went outside and I went for a little walk and I like thought it through to see if this was a real event. Like, is this a real thing, you know? And, you know, I didn't do anything for like the next week. And then I was like, you know what, maybe this is a real thing. So I started to like work on it to like dig and see if what this really meant. And then I stumbled upon Electric Universe and I was like, wow, these people have these ideas too. Like some similar ideas, but you know, a lot of them are different. And I was like, you know, trying to like feel out where I was going with it. And it's just been a whole like journey of figuring out where establishment has been, you know, making false assumptions and where their good data is, and it's just been sorting it all out. And it's been a really, really time consuming, and you know, it's been really difficult to handle, and just getting people to like listen to what's going on is very difficult.
Oh, I'm sure. So you had, and that kind of answers my next question, which was, where did the Electric Universe theory play into this? And you hadn't heard of it when you first came up with the theory.
Oh, I had no idea. No idea whatsoever.
So why don't you talk us through a little bit about what your star formation theory is, how the star itself forms.
Well, I don't know exactly, so I'm going to throw that out there, but I do believe that stellar birth is not a gravitational event. It's not... you have a big cloud and then it collapses on itself magically. I don't think it works like that because gas, you know, there's vacuum in outer space. Gas doesn't condense like that. It doesn't work like that. I think what happens is that you have a buildup of a huge amount of electromagnetic energy, like maybe charged particles that are in a single spot. And somehow those charged particles want to equalize. To think about like the best analogy for it is like a lightning bolt. You have your cloud that sits above, you know, about 2,000, 3,000 feet above the surface, and it pulls all those, you know, negative or positive charges up into the cloud, and eventually it stores so much energy that it has to equalize, and it shoots off a lightning bolt. But to think, if there was a cloud the size of a solar system, how big would that lightning bolt be, and what kind of event, what would actually show up? Like, would it be like a stable event? Would it just be a big flash? You know, what would really happen and how much material would become ionized in that event? And I thought, well, if it's a large cloud, it'll ionize a whole lot of material. And I think that's how stars are born.
Okay. All right. Where do quasars come into this?
I don't know about quasars either. I do believe that there is some type of connecting event. I think maybe that the amount of material inside of a equalization event, so to speak, would have to determine, it have to be like how much helium and hydrogen is in that localized area. Because I think what happens is if an equalization event happens and there's a lot of iron in there, it can't collapse further. The iron like prevents it from collapsing all the way. But if there's a lot of helium and hydrogen there, it'll collapse further and further and further, and it'll, I don't think about that a lot, but I do think that somehow that stellar birth and quasar formation are similar, but the mechanisms, they branch off in two different ways. I guess that's the best way I can explain it.
Okay.
But once the quasar is formed, it isn't a quasar, it's actually a pulsar, and the pulsar gets ejected from a galaxy, and then that pulsar begins growing, so to speak, and ejecting material in bilateral configurations, and that's what I think, that's how galaxies are born. I think Haltzen-Arp is the most correct concerning that, is that galaxies beget galaxies, you know, like oak trees and acorns kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Okay, and so from you have the star, and you think it eventually will just collapse down into the various planets. So you use I know in one of the papers you sent me you used Jupiter as an example.
Well, to be more specific, it isn't these objects collapse all at the same time. What happens is that you have the younger objects, you know, traveling through the galaxy, adopting objects that are in the way, in its path.
Hmm.
And those objects are actually more evolved stars, some of them much more evolved than others. And that's what makes solar systems, so to speak.
Okay. So when do you think that the current solar system took on its current configuration?
About 65 million years ago.
Oh, okay. So you're not looking just a few thousand years ago like some of the electric universe ideas.
That's a big difference as well. Thank you for pointing that out.
Okay, where else does your theory differ from the EU?
I don't believe that the major events that happen, celestially speaking, happen within human history. I think the major events happen over many tens of millions of years.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, do you believe in the Big Bang theory? Do you think mainstream science is right on those levels? Or?
Well, the thing is I think the universe is more like a forest, and you have the trees inside the forest. And the trees beget other trees with acorns, you know, the galaxies beget quasars, which then grow into fully grown galaxies themselves. So I think the universe is more or less a giant forest of galaxies. And to say that it had a beginning would be like going down to the Amazon forest and saying, look, the Amazon forest just popped into existence. You know, I don't think it works like that. So I don't believe that the Big Bang is correct by any means.
Okay. All right. Now, what do you think of these exoplanet finds that astronomy is coming up with?
Oh, that's a big thing. There's a lot to that. the exoplanets, the thing is about them is that there isn't even a definition for them scientifically. If you go up to Wikipedia, they don't have exoplanets defined, and there's a reason for that. They don't have exoplanets defined because they don't understand how planets are formed, and they don't understand how stars evolve. And it sounds really like bad to say that, but they don't. And that's why they can't even define the objects that they're apparently finding. And that's the first step. You have to be able to define scientifically what you're looking at, and they can't even do that.
Well, but they have pretty solid ideas of what type of planets they are.
Oh, yeah, they have ideas of what they are, but there's no definition for exoplanet. The definition they have is just only applies to our solar system. There's only a definition for planet, and a lot of people, they don't realize that. And it helps if they were to realize that, because then they would realize that, you know, there's more than what meets the eye, you know, to the papers that they write.
Okay, all right. Now, obviously, any kind of alternative theory like this is going to be met with complete resistance. Have you tried to get anything published or get anyone to acknowledge it in the mainstream?
Basically, I learned the hard way that if you have ideas that people don't agree with, it's insulting to them. You know, it's just as much of an insult to tell somebody a new idea that they disagree with than it is to, like, call them names. It's insulting to a scientist for them to spend so many years studying something, and then this random person comes up and says, well, this is all incorrect, you know. Nobody likes to be called wrong, you know, even if they don't say it's, you know, even actually say that they're wrong, you know.
Yeah, oh, certainly. Certainly, and that I think that's one of the issues with science. It's not the scientific method, but it's ego, it's money.
Big time.
So have you published anything officially?
Officially, I went to Natural Philosophy Alliance, I think is what it's called, about 3-4 years ago. In 2013, they published a book with the outline of the theory in the book. But in official like type things, you know, where it has to be like, you know, I don't know. I just don't know what official really means in that case. I mean, if they put it in a book full of other ideas for a specific instance, I guess that's the only, you know, real publication that I have. It's from a third party, I guess.
Okay. So is it worth it to you to do this if you're not going to get acknowledged in the big term, you know?
Oh, of course. It's totally worth it because, you know, if you have something really amazing, you should share it. And I think if you discover something like this, it's basically your responsibility to share it. You should never keep things like this to yourself.
You have a pretty detailed paper out on this. Is that publicly available?
All my ramblings, I guess you could say, are all publicly available. I put them in two spots, the General Science Journal and Vixra. I pronounce it Vixra. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. But I would take a lot of those papers with a grain of salt because they're very, very creative and a lot of them are incorrect. But it helps to write incorrect papers. That way, you know, it gives people different ideas about what could possibly be right and what could be wrong, you know, that good stuff.
Talk about the Grand Canyon a little bit here.
The Grand Canyon? What specifically about it?
Well, the way you have the layering down and what you think caused it.
Oh, yes, differentiation when the Earth was a gas giant. The Earth had a very, very thick atmosphere, and that material layered onto the ground as it was differentiating itself. And over time, that's why the Earth is differentiated. You have your iron core, you have your mantle, and on the crust, that's just the leftover remains of the very last stages of the differentiation process before the atmosphere, you know, started to get ripped away by the sun.
Hmm. And what do you think pulls it all down? Or I should say, what do you think gravity is?
I have no idea what gravity is.
All right.
I don't know. I wish I did. I would build a spaceship and go explore around.
Do you think that any of the ideas we currently have on gravity are likely to be accurate?
No, not one single one. I think gravity is one of those really, really good riddles that Mother Nature has handed us. I think it's going to take one hell of a creative person to solve it. And I also think that you'll be able to tell when they do solve it because they'll be ridiculed a lot. So look for the person who gets called a lot of names in online forums and you'll see where the truth is.
Yeah, maybe 100 years later.
Yeah.
Do you have any monetary support behind any of this?
That'd be cool if I did, but I don't really need it at the moment. I actually just have my own job that I work at, and you know, I just you know write up the papers and do my own research, and you know, I have Baz Taylor in the UK. He's making me graphics videos outlining the process, which is really cool. But he's doing that for free, so.
Hmm. Well, that's cool. And you're obviously still working on this theory.
Oh, God, there's so much to do. When I first started, I thought I was going to get help from professionals. But it turns out, you know, they don't want to have anything to do with an idea that goes against what they were told in school, which is, you know, lessons learned.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it should just be. I mean, there are going to be people who hear this and go, "Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, you didn't go to school for it. You don't understand."
I do have physics classes, chemistry classes. I have biology classes under my belt. Geology. I know science. I know how it works.
Right. Well, but what I'm saying is, they're going to say you don't have a PhD in this particular field.
Oh, that's the credibility game. That's what that is.
And I think we should look at all kinds of theories. Otherwise, we're taking the slow track forward.
Oh yeah, the path hammered before us. The way forward is hammered out in front of us. That's the old saying.
I saw an article today talking about light coming from a black hole, which they then corrected to be light coming from something being sucked into a black hole. And I thought, okay, you know, you're acting like this is a given that these black holes are existing. This could be something else entirely, but it's not even open for discussion.
Well, yeah, that's how they like it. The only people that are allowed to discuss it and the only people that are allowed to be confused about the subject are those who apparently have these degrees where, you know, I don't understand. I think it's more or less like a social construct, if you will. I don't think the black hole is just about, you know, if there's a physical object there. I think it has to do more with people's status in society and who's allowed to argue about it and who isn't. You know, think about it, like Stephen Hawking was in that position that it was in, you know, the chair, the Newton chair, was it? For like 30, mm-hmm. 30 years he was sitting in that chair, you know, thinking up all these wild ideas, you know? So
yeah,
you know, nobody could match him. So they all had to just, you know, accept what he was saying, you know, and go along with that paradigm.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that science moves ahead via people dying.
Oh, that's so true. I was surprised about that. I was so naive. I was like, wow, it's true.
Like, okay, so those people who had those entrenched ideas are now dead, and some of these new ideas can come in, and then those get entrenched, and we have to wait another generation for those people to die for the next generation of ideas.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What's his name? The guy who had a hard time believing that we could split the atom, so to speak. What was his name? I think it was Kelvin? Lord Kelvin, was it? Yeah, he was a brilliant scientist, but he resisted with all his energy the idea that there's something called atomic energy. And, you know, we're sitting here like, you know, using, you know, bombs now, or back in the day we blow them up, and to think he resisted that idea, yet he was a really brilliant man, you know.
Sure, and I believe Einstein resisted the whole quantum theory.
Oh yeah, yeah, he resisted that. Oh yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, no one's 100% right. We're never going to be 100% right, because there's always going to be more stuff to discover and understand.
There's always going to be more. Yes, you're completely correct.
What are you working on currently?
Well, currently I just printed out a paper on Archive. It was let's see here, it says, a hot Jupiter transiting an A star in a misaligned orbit detected with Doppler tomography. It was the KELT 17b. And I'm reading over this paper, and I'm noticing a lot of inconsistencies. I mean, I don't want to bore you with the details, but basically a lot of the inconsistencies are rooted in their failure to understand that stellar evolution is planet formation. So they go back and forth with all these ideas, and they're so confused. And I'm like, wow, okay, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. It's weird looking at it with, you know, this theory. It's like, wow, they have a lot to learn.
Who would you say your biggest influences on building this theory were?
My biggest influence was definitely Halton Arp, Hans Alfvén, Bill Gatey. Let's see, who else? Dissonant type individuals. People who stood up for ideas regardless of if they were correct or not, and who wanted to get their voice heard and had a difficult time doing that regardless if their message was an amazing message.
Okay. All right. Do you have a website or anything?
I don't have a website. I have a little blog where I like poke fun at establishment scientists and I write random notes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where can people find that?
Yeah. stellar-metamorphosis.blogspot.com.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else people should know about this theory? Anything we didn't cover?
I think the most important part about this is to keep an open mind, because once you fully understand it, you're not going to look at the stars in the night sky the same. You're not going to look at the Earth the same. Everything's going to change when you fully understand it, and it will be emotional for people if they really get it. I mean, it just like it was for me. So be careful of that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jeff.
All right.
All right. And if you want to know more about Jeff's theory, he does have a couple of websites up now, a new YouTube page. which is under Mr. Walinski, W-O-L-Y-N-S-K-I. But you can just search for Jeffrey Walinski, and you should be able to find him, and maybe Planet. I think that's what I used, and I found that. And there's a link there to all his papers off of his YouTube, so you can go there as well and check out the different papers he's written about this. So there you go. Sorry for the delay on posting it. See you next time.